Joining us on today's episode of Bottom Line Baseball, Chris Young. He's the bullpen coach of the Chicago Cubs. Chris, first off, thanks so much for coming on the show. We are recording this the night after John Lester made his return to Wrigley Field. What was that like to see Lester back and pitching at Wrigley Field?
Yeah, it was really neat. You know, it was I actually had more fun watching everybody else react to it. You know, I was fortunate enough to have 1 year last year, a short year around John and Kyle Schwarber, and grew to just respect them both immensely. But it was really cool to watch the guys that had played with them, won World Series with them, kind of react and to see kind of guys that, I mean, you know, Lester's so revered around here. So it was a really neat experience. It was cool to see and nice to get a win at the end of the night too.
Chris, what does David Ross mean to the organization? Obviously a former catcher, World Series champ, and now the manager of the Chicago Cubs.
God, man, he's incredible. He is just, he's so real. He's so honest. He's just got such a genuine way about him that, it's just really cool. It's really fun. It's really fun to be around him. He's got the ability to keep things light. He knows when to get after it a little bit. And so, I think that he's just so real, and he's always real. And so it's really fun to be around him. He's doing an incredible job.
What have you learned most from David Ross?
Man, you know, I think that's a great question. I think the one thing that I've learned through him is he is not afraid ever of the tough conversation. And sometimes in these jobs, when you're dealing with certain situations, you got to have a tough conversation with players or other coaches. And he's just not afraid of them. And he understands that you need to have them. And it's really been a learning experience in that regard.
Chris, one of the players, Jake Arrieta, came back to the organization. What does he mean to the younger pitchers on the staff?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jake's great. I mean, I was fortunate enough to spend 2 years with him in Philly, and then for him to be back here too. You see, you know, he's kind of been through it all. He's been the big-time prospect. He's been the guy that took a little bit longer to get to where everyone thought he was going to get to. He's had success at an incredibly high rate, and so he's got a lot of experiences that are pretty unique that he can talk to a lot of different guys and affect them in a positive way through his different experiences.
So Chris, if some baseball fans don't know what exactly a bullpen coach is, how would you describe what a bullpen coach does in the game of baseball?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's I think it can be different for different people. You know, I think it can be different based on what your pitching coach needs. But to kind of simplify it a little bit, I mean, you're locked in a room with 8 or 9 different guys for 3 hours a night. And your job is to, from the moment you get to the field till the end of the game, is to help prepare them in the best possible way to essentially answer a phone call and then 3 minutes later be thrust into the highest leverage point of any game, and to help prepare them mentally, help prepare them physically, help them understand the situation they're getting into. I think you're the really big points of the job.
Chris, you obviously played and you have done things in the scouting department. How have all those experiences helped you with your role now as a bullpen coach?
Man, a ton. You know, I've been really fortunate to be around a lot of really good people in my career, even, you know, from college, from playing for Ron Polk and Pat McMahon to being hired in pro ball and being around AJ Hinch for 7 or 8 years. And you know, a guy you guys know, Gene Watson, and, you know, and then from going into the coaching side and having some, you know, friendship with Brent Strom. I mean, just, I've been really fortunate to be around a lot of really good people that I've tried to draw from and steal from throughout. And so I think that's really helped. I mean, the scouting experience is just, it's hard to describe. I say it all the time. It's like, I know, I always, my line's like, I know what it's like to wear khakis. And sometimes the decisions you have to make from a scouting or a front office perspective don't always make sense when you're in baseball pants. And having kind of been on both sides of those, I can see how those decisions are made. And I think that's been very beneficial.
So looking back on it now, you've already had an accomplished career in the game. What's been one of your favorite moments in your career? Is it right now or is it something else?
Oh man, it's funny. You don't, this game goes so fast. Sometimes you don't look back. I think, one of my favorite, vivid memories is I have a picture of, with the American League Championship trophy, from Houston in 2017 with one of my good friends, AJ Hinch, and I, and that's got a pretty cool place in my house that, him and I, like I said, I mean, obviously I think the world of him, and he's been incredible to me. So like that's a pretty cool thing. I think it was really, really neat last year to win the Central Division in a Cubs uniform and just in a really odd year. You think about the Cubs, I think the Cubs are one of those franchises that like nationwide is revered. And it's been, I'm fortunate I've got to experience it this year. You go to Atlanta and there's Cubs fans, and you go to Pittsburgh and there's Cubs fans. And so last year, what was a really odd year to be able to put up a 2020 flag that'll fly at Wrigley Field forever, was a pretty cool thing too.
Chris, you brought up AJ. What does AJ mean to you, and what's the biggest lesson you've learned from him?
Man, he just, that's a great question. There's a lot there. He means a ton to me. I mean, he plucked me. I was a Division II college baseball coach at St. Edward's, and he hired me to go be a pro scout for the Padres, and taught me a lot. Taught me a lot about player evaluation. Taught me a lot about how front offices work. Was fortunate enough to get to go to Houston shortly after he went to Houston, and to watch how he dealt with players, how he dealt with involving analytics and information into baseball and to managing. And so there's just a ton there. I think the one thing that I always took away every time I would see him in Houston or leaving Houston, or even San Diego as well too, was just his ability to connect with people, his ability to form relationships. It's incredible the way people talk about him when he's not around. It's always positive. And so I think that's something I really look up to. It's something that, I always try to keep in mind and watch how he interacts with people and try to mimic it. Cause it's pretty unique. It's pretty special.
When did you realize, Chris, that it wasn't just playing the game, but it was managing people and those personalities as well in the game?
Yeah, it's funny. Even when I played, I always found myself, especially in college, I always found myself not at the one end of the dugout with the players, but more, I was always more towards the end of the dugout with the coaches and listening to what they talked about and listening to the strategy and listening to how they talked and why they talked about things. And even as a player in pro ball, like I probably spent more time on the bench talking to the hitting coach than I did the pitching coach, learning just what they were thinking in that perspective. And so it's just something I've always, always tried to learn. I mean, this game's so neat because it's always teaching you something, whether it's a strategy or it's a decision or it's, hey, this happened, how do you go about it? And so I've always kind of looked at it from that perspective. Now where there's so much information in the game, you have so many, hey, I think this would work. Hey, I think this is right. Hey, I think we can make this adjustment. And a lot of the times you can have the best adjustments, the best information, but if you don't understand the person you're working with and where they're at in their headspace and where they're at in their career and where they're at in their development and how to take that information to them, but maybe even more importantly, when to take that information to them, the information you have is lost if you do any of that at the wrong time. And so just those experiences, I think I've really tried to use them in those situations.
Chris, how important is it to know your players and especially your bullpen guys, just being the bullpen coach?
It's the most important thing. I don't think there's anything more important than getting to know those guys inside and out, knowing what drives them at the field, knowing what their routines are, knowing what they like to do, knowing that when I walk up to them and say, hey, how you feeling today? Knowing that they say something verbally, but they shake their head the other way when they're talking, that means I know he's barking a little bit. Knowing that he's got two, that one of our guys has got two young kids at home, and and they're having trouble sleeping, and he shows up to the field looking a little groggy, you know, knowing that it's like, okay, like just my, I might need to pump him up a little bit today. He's dragging a little bit from home life. It's the most important thing. It's the most important thing, period, in my mind. It's just, there's so much, it's a human interaction game. And as much as, like I said earlier, like there's information and like, I want to make sure my guy knows the scouting report, but I've got 8 or 9 guys on a given day. Like not all 8 or 9 of them need the scouting report the same way. They don't need me to talk to them the same way. We've got some guys down there right now that have made their second, third, fourth major league appearances of their careers. I'm not having the same conversations with them as I'm having with Adam or Andrew Chafin or Craig Kimbrell, who are 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years deep. And so trying to just understand where those guys are at and treat them as individuals. And so that the messages we need to get across, the information we need to get across reaches them in a way that is suitable for them.
I think one word that keeps being used so much more this year and any other year, in my opinion, is game planning. What exactly goes into a game plan for fans that just hear the word and don't really understand what a game plan is?
A lot. You know, again, like it's the, with this, just with the massive amounts of information that are available, you know, teams are devoting 1, 2, 3 people to this process of trying to game plan. And, you know, and essentially it's understanding what hitters do well, understanding what they might not do as well, but then most importantly, matching that up to what your guys do well. And then where that gets a lot of fun is you've got what the hitter doesn't do well. You've got what your guy does well. There's this big gray area in the middle. And that's the most fun part to navigate. Am I going to use my third pitch to go get this guy's big weakness? Or do I want to go with my strength versus his strength? Like those are fun conversations that we talk about daily that, you know, sometimes it's, hey, this is what I do. I'm riding it. I'm going to go get it. And then sometimes it's like, hey, here's a situation where like, this is my third pitch, but this guy really struggles with it. Let's go lean on that and let's go get this guy with that. So it's fun. It's something I've got a little bit of a passion for. We've got a great group that spends a lot of time on it. And so it's a lot of fun, but it's definitely an area where the information has the information available has changed the way people game plan now.
Chris, you kind of talked about game planning and going into that. How much do you look ahead to say, hey, we have this guy up in the order and we have a reliever that's dominant against this guy and any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, so one of the things that I think is really important is you've got the game plan information and you've also got matchup history. And when you've got some guys that have been around the game for a while, or even guys that are, you know, in a couple of years, you can go back and look in even interdivisional opponents. We're getting ready to play the Cardinals next weekend. I'll start looking into today, tomorrow, like, hey, how are our relievers individually done versus the Cardinals? And you're looking for a matchup that might say like, hey, so-and-so has been really, really good against Paul Goldschmidt. Well, the information might say, well, he shouldn't be, but then like, well, let's go back and look. Why is Paul Goldschmidt 1-for-10 with 6 strikeouts versus this guy and dig into it and why? And you try and find those where they stick out. You try and highlight them. You try and make sure that that Rossi's aware of that. We talk about it through a game planning sense. But there's a lot that you can take away from the previous matchups. A lot you can take away from what the player is doing now. You know, a lot you can lean into. Well, hey, right now my guy's got his cutter going as good as it's ever been. And maybe that's where we can go lean with this at bat versus so-and-so. So there's a lot that goes into it. And I think like you can really glean a lot from some matchup history as well as kind of like strengths and weaknesses.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but when you were the pitching coach with the Phillies, I don't believe the 3-batter minimum rule was implemented. So how has that kind of changed this whole bullpen usage in the game now with that new rule?
Yeah, it's you're correct. It was not. It's definitely changed it. It's you have a couple things I think that have really impacted it. Number one, like when you're looking to acquire players, you're potentially looking for players for relievers that might be closer to platoon neutral versus the just gargantuan splits of this guy's great versus right, but really poor versus left. Because obviously managers aren't going to give you that pocket, generally speaking, anymore now where you can just go get one or two hitters. And so player acquisition, you're potentially looking for guys closer to platoon neutral splits. And it's also to bring back into game planning perspective, it's brought that into, you know, you bring the lefty in and two out of the three guys are lefties. Okay, go get them. But then you've got this one righty in the middle that, generally speaking, is probably going to have done damage versus lefties, which is why the manager constructed the lineup that way. And so it's really taken in, okay, where does this guy do his damage at? How does he do his damage? How can we match up what our lefty does to potentially avoid that, or some strategy, or, hey, does the game situation dictate we can pitch around, or does the game situation dictate, hey, just go get him. We're up three. We're good. It's brought a lot of that strategy into the game.
Chris, you were with the Phillies before the Cubs, obviously. What was it like to be around Bryce Harper every day?
Yeah, it was neat. It really was. I mean, getting to spend a whole year with him. He's an incredible person. It always baffled me. We would go to ballparks and you hear the opposition, you know, you hear the opposing fans, you know, boo. Like the guy just shows up and he plays every single day. And he plays really hard. I think one of my favorite, one of my favorite compliments about Bryce is that I remember in 19, we got eliminated with like a week or two, maybe 7 days to go in the season. And our manager, Gabe Kapler, it called him and Real Muto in, was going to like, hey, you guys just went really hard here trying to push. I'm going to give you guys a blow. And I remember, and I knew that was happening. And then Harp was in the lineup and I'd asked our bench coach, I said, hey, Harp's in there, huh? And he goes, yeah, he told Cap, he said, hey, there's some kids that showed up today to watch me play and I'm going to go out and play today. And his first at bat hit a single over the shortstop's head. We were in Washington. The left fielder didn't go after it as hard as possible, and he turned a single into a double in a game where we were eliminated, where he had the option to not play. The guy loves playing baseball. He plays with his hair on fire. He's a great teammate. He's super respectful. And on top of that, like, he's so stinking talented. He can do a lot of really cool things on the baseball field that are fun to watch.
Well, Chris, this is our favorite part of the show. It's a fast five quick round. It's five quick questions, and you have as much time to answer them as possible. The first one that I have, what is your favorite Gene Watson story?
Woof. That's I don't even know where to begin. He's the one of the best human beings you'll ever meet. And I'll think of a story, but the biggest compliment I will give and I will say is that the moment you asked me that question, the first thing I did was smile. And I think that's the best compliment you can give somebody, is the moment his name comes up, I gave him a big smile. I think that my favorite, I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's my first ever Gene Watson story, is my wife and I had just moved back to Georgetown. This was like 2003. My wife's from Georgetown. We moved back and I was kind of looking around like, man, there's some like baseball facilities, or how do I work? Can I train? Is there a place to kind of do some lessons in the off season? I was probably ticketed. I think I was maybe potentially going to high A that next year. And I saw an ad in the newspaper for Pro Way indoor baseball facility. And it said like grand opening with special guest Rafael Palmeiro. And I remember going like, man, like, so I played at Mississippi State. I've gotten to know Rafi a little bit. And I was like, I wonder who got Rafael Palmeiro to come. So I called the number and I'm talking to Gene. I'm like, oh, hey, I just moved back. You know, living in the area. I played, I played for the Rockies, yada, yada, yada. And if to know Gene is to love Gene, his first comments, like his, and he tells me this later, he says, No, you don't. Like, I know this area better than anybody. There's no Chris Young from the Rockies that lives in Georgetown, Texas. This isn't right. This guy's lying to me. So he starts, boom, what does he do? He picks up the phone. He goes right into his Rolodex of contacts. And then, like, next thing you know, he calls me back, like, an hour later. He goes, hey, man, like, you do play for the Rockies. I'm like, Yeah, I told you I play for the Rockies. And so, like, and then since then, we've been just incredibly great friends. But, I definitely remember that story.
Chris, what is your favorite moment in Mississippi State?
Oh, man. I'm going to give you two. I'm going to give you one was my freshman year. There's a weekend in Starkville. It's called Super Bulldog Weekend. Happens every spring. It's essentially like homecoming for baseball. And there's the spring football games that weekend. All the sports teams play on campus. It's a huge deal. And it was my freshman year. So I had heard about it, but wasn't really aware of what was going on. My parents came down for the first time. We were playing Ole Miss. And I came in to pitch on Saturday night against Ole Miss, and there was 13,500 there. And just like, I ain't pitched three innings and struck out like seven guys, which was neat. And it wasn't as neat as after the game, walking out into the outfield and seeing the look on my parents' face. And so like, that was obviously like the look on their face of like, we had no idea what any of us were getting into when we went, you know, from Akron, from Stowe, Ohio to Starkville, Mississippi. Like, that was really cool. And then I think just from a team perspective, it was really neat. My sophomore year winning the SEC, beating LSU in the SEC championship game was something pretty cool too.
The third one, what is your go-to karaoke song?
My go-to karaoke song is to sit there and hang out and watch everybody else karaoke and to suggest to them what songs I think they should sing. Do not have a singing voice, do not have a theatrical bone in my body. But I am a very good supporter of anyone that likes to karaoke. I will write it on paper. I will walk the song up there for you, but it's pretty much anything I can do to not get thrust to have to do karaoke.
Can you dance?
I can dance in my seat while I'm watching people karaoke. I'm a really good sing-along supporter while I am just kind of sitting hanging out.
What is your craziest minor league baseball story?
Oh, man. It kind of coincides with, I think, my welcome to minor league baseball moment. Again, lucky enough to play at Mississippi State. Tremendous program, very well funded, supported, a top 5-10 program, and was drafted by the Rockies and then opened up in up in Tri-Cities in the Northwest League. And our first bus trip was from there to Boise, Idaho. We got across the mountains a little bit, a little warmer up there, and we're like halfway, bus overheats and breaks down. Get the bus going a little bit, no air conditioning, no windows, and you're basically on your first bus trip in professional baseball, no shirt on, rationing water, sweating through your clothes. And I remember thinking like halfway over some mountain, halfway in between, going like, is this what we signed up for? Like, this is interesting, but definitely like the most vivid welcome to minor league baseball moment.
What teams did you play for in the minor leagues?
Let's see. I played in Tri-Cities. I played in Asheville, North Carolina. Great place. Tremendous place.
Where's Tri-City?
Tri-Cities is up in Washington State, up in the Tri-Cities area. Pasco. There's two more cities that I've drawn a blank on. Asheville, North Carolina, Visalia, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Lynchburg. And then I played in Jupiter, and then Zebulon, which is double A for the Marlins, and then Albuquerque, triple A for the Marlins for a little bit. And then I spent my last, 3 months of my farewell in the Atlantic League in Camden, New Jersey.
What was the biggest difference between playing minor league ball and then the Atlantic League?
I would say the differences between Triple A and the Atlantic League, as far as like the talent aren't drastically different. I think in the Atlantic League, you could see nights where Maybe some of the starting pitching that wasn't as talented as the double A or triple A levels. And you could just see an absolute just dud of a baseball game, like just a dud, where like no one wants to be there. Guys are shutting it down. Which you rarely if ever get in the minor leagues. I mean, you know, those guys in AAA in the minor leagues know where they're at. They know how close they are. But again, I think the talent was not a drastic drop off. I just think at times in the Atlantic League, you could run into a dud of a baseball game.
Mm-hmm. And then the last question that we have for you, if a 15-year-old kid walked up to Chris Young right now and said, "Chris, baseball is boring to me. I'm never going to watch it." What are you going to say to that 15-year-old kid?
That's a great question, because I'm afraid it's not. It's been asked probably here lately. I think you try and explain a little bit baseball in a little bit greater detail, and by that I mean just a little bit more of the game within the game. You try to explain like this guy just struck out on three pitches. That's boring, you know. And I think you try and explain this is Walker Buehler. This is a 98 mile. This is one of the best fastballs in the game. This is the best curveball in the game. This is how they work together to get that strikeout. I think like explaining some of those details. And then I think quite honestly, like I'd pull up YouTube and show them Shohei Ohtani. You know, I think I would pull up YouTube and show them Mookie Betts. I think I would show Bryce Harper hitting a walk-off grand slam against the Cubs in 2019 and sprinting around the bases like a madman who can't wait to get back to his teammates. I think I would show him, like, there's just so many just crazy talented guys playing baseball right now that I think pushing them out into the forefront, you know, I think is important. I would pull up the YouTube and watch him, show him Craig Kimbrel punching out the side and showing him like, hey, like 10 years from now, like this guy's going to have a plaque and go into a building that know that less than 1% of the guys that ever do this get to it and try and explain to them, not necessarily like the let the kids play phenomenon, but just like how fun this game is and how incredibly uniquely talented these guys are that play the game.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. But Chris, thanks so much for coming on Bottom Line Baseball today. Good luck the rest of the season, and we'll have to talk to you during the off season.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.